I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KrisAnnehall.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Big show today, lots of things to cover. Very excited about the radio show, as we always are. Also very excited about an endeavor that we are joining with Kate Daly with Fox Radio, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that today because this is exciting. This is what we're calling an alliance. Those of you who do not know Kate Daly, I hope that you will get acquainted with her. She has a nationally syndicated radio show on Fox Radio. And she is also a very dedicated patriot. I think because she's such a dedicated mom, I think that's something that drives many of us, as did drive the founders of our Constitutional Republic. Remember, my favorite founding mother often talked about what we were doing, what they were doing was for their posterity. She said, we will stand against tyranny today. Mercy Otis Warren said, if we will stand against tyranny today, or our children will bow tomorrow. And I'm very excited about this alliance with Kate. And it's going to be a forum in which you're going to get unique information from us. You're going to get videos and articles and podcasts that you can't find anywhere else. And we're going to be launching this forum next week. So I hope that you will look into this. I will have everything for you in the next break. I'll give you the links and how to get in touch with Kate and what we need to do to make sure that you are plugged in. I'm very excited about the opportunity to teach in a more in-depth manner with Kate. Little sound bites. You know what's exciting about this forum is that we're also going to be having live chats a couple times a month where you're going to be able to come in through this live chat website and ask and interact with us real time. So Kate will be there, I will be there, and you'll be able to ask your questions. I don't know if that's the most exciting part for me, having the opportunity to do this interactions, to have these personal interactions and have your own private little question and answer session with Kate Daly and with me. And so I want you guys to know more about this alliance. I think it's going to be a really, really good thing. Today's show, we are going to be talking about James Comey. We're going to be talking about Governor Abbott from Texas outlawing sanctuary cities. We're going to be talking about Jeff Sessions and the repeal of the Obama administration's methods of prosecution for drug crimes. We're going to be talking about congressional oversight of regulations. We're going to be talking about, about a former U.S. Congresswoman being found guilty from stealing from the people. And if we keep going, I'm hoping we're going to be talking about the Affordable Care Act and what Congress is and is not doing. And all of these things I think that we will be able to get to today, but we're going to have to get right to it. There's a lot of controversy today about the sanctuary cities. And, you know, one of the things that I keep seeing in the mainstream media, in the talking heads, is the description of what's going on as being a deep-rooted controversy, a deep-rooted debate on sanctuary cities. Frankly, I'm a bit confused as to why there is the perception of such a deep debate over sanctuary cities. And I believe that the debate over sanctuary cities exists, once again, is rooted in our lack of understanding, our lack of knowledge regarding the Constitution itself. Remember, those of you who listen to the Chris Ann Hall Show, who are students of Liberty First, you know that the Constitution is a contract. And the terms of those this contract is explicitly enumerated. Amongst the terms of that contract are the terms that we must allow the federal government to create the uniform rules of naturalization. That is, without question, an enumerated power. And when the states joined in on this constitutional contract, when they came together to form the union, they said to each other, we will be bound by the terms of the contract. And in these terms of the contract, we are going to delegate certain power to the federal government, and we're going to reserve all other power to the states. Amongst that power that is delegated is the power to create uniform rules of naturalization. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 of the Constitution is the part of the contract where we have told the federal government that they have this authority to establish an uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcy throughout the United States. So we contracted, each state contracted with each other, for the authority to be delegated to the federal government in the creation of these uniform rules of naturalization. Sanctuary cities are not simply a violation of federal law. Sanctuary cities are a violation of the terms of the contract between the states. Governor Abbott is doing exactly what each governor ought to be doing now that we have cities who are operating contrary to the contract agreed upon by the states. The states are responsible for ensuring that the terms of the contract are met. They are as the contracting parties. They are responsible for making sure that they are in compliance with the terms of the contract. And they cannot have governmental bodies within their jurisdiction who are operating outside the terms of the contract. Sanctuary cities are violating that contract. There should be no debate over this. This is a matter of contract law. This is a matter of the terms of the Constitution. And it's absolutely, it's baffling to me that educated people who are supposed to be educated in the terms of contracts, in the matters of law, would believe that this is a debatable item. if this were a business contract, if this were an employment contract, being so specifically enumerated within the terms of the contract, there wouldn't be a debate over it. But here's the problem. We have failed to teach the truth about our Constitution, not just in our K through 12, but we have failed to teach the truth about our Constitution for so very long in the higher levels of education, and I'm talking law school here, that most individuals do not or even refuse to recognize the Constitution as a contract, which is also rather baffling to me. I mean, you have to practically redact 65%. Of course, that's just a number off the top of my head, but you have to redact most of what our founder said during the ratification debates, during the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers and the letters that they wrote to each other when they were discussing the nature of the Constitution. If you're going to deny that the Constitution is a contract, you have to redact, literally ignore most of what they said about the Constitution. I've always sort of scratched my head over this idea, this terminology, that this modern classification as the constitutional compact theory. They keep using that word theory. I'm not quite sure if they understand what the word theory means. Because the designers of the Constitution made it abundantly clear in their words, in their actions, in their text, that the Constitution is a compact, which is a contract between sovereign governments. And as a term of that contract, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 dictates that the authority to establish rules of naturalization are vested in Congress, not in the executive, not in the judiciary, but Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 vests this in Congress. And when we come back after the break, I want us to understand, I want us to discuss the consequences for violating the terms of this contract.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. I was talking to you in the last segment about the alliance that we are forming with Kate Daly Radio. And I want you to know how to find Kate Daly so that you can become a part of this alliance. Also, you should follow us on Facebook and on Twitter because we have that opportunity to give you information on a daily basis through Facebook and Twitter. So if you are interested in knowing more about this alliance, I hope that you will be interested in becoming a part of this alliance. Then you will be able to find that information by going to katedallyradio.com, KATEDALLEY radio.com. Or you can always find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you're going to find me on Facebook and Twitter, please don't search my name. They're making it very difficult. I don't know why, but they're making it very difficult for people to find me through a name search. It's not like I have a very common name, okay? So I don't understand the hang up there. But if you want to find me on Facebook and Twitter, go to my website, chrisannhall.com, and click on the links on the website to Facebook and Twitter. That is the only way you will know that you will get the right Facebook account. There are several Facebook accounts out there with my name on them, some of them real, some of them not. And so if you want to make sure that you get the right page, You need to go to chrisannhall.com, K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E-H-A-L-L.com, and click on the links within the page. Also, those of you who are watching on the Chris Ann Hall television show, you'll notice that I'm wearing one of my Liberty First t-shirts today. I love my Liberty First. I love them, you know, because they come in women's sizes. They are lady sizes with the neckline a little bit lower, and it's tapered in on the inside, so we don't look like we're wearing our husband's t-shirts. But you can always find our t-shirts, the gray eagle and the black bell Liberty First Brigade t-shirts, on our website, chrisannhall.com. And these are always a good way to open the door to the Liberty conversation. You know, everything that we have, the bumper stickers, which those on the Chris Ann Hall television show are seeing on the back of my computer, Liberty First is liberty over security, principle over party, truth over personality. All of these things, the t-shirt, the bumper stickers, are about taking back the narrative of truth, about opening the channels of saying, hey, look, I want to talk about liberty. Are you willing to talk too? Make people ask you questions so that you can offer up information. Icebreakers, they call them in the public forum. Ask them, let them ask you, what is this all about, this Liberty First? What is this all about? And then you'll be able to share. You don't have to sort of bring things up out of the blue, and you don't have to be annoying and obnoxious about it. But when you make people thirsty for information, they're more able to assimilate what you're going to give to them. And that's what we try to do here at Liberty First. Understanding you can take a man to water, but you cannot make him drink. Our job is not to make you drink. Our job is to make America thirsty for liberty. So we've been talking about Governor Abbott's bill banning sanctuary cities. We know that through Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, that is a power that has been delegated to the federal government. Therefore, by contract, the states have an obligation to enforce those uniform rules of naturalization. Now, no rule is good, is worth anything, if there is not a penalty for not following that rule. And the uniform rules of naturalization have their penalties. They come under 8 U.S. Code 1324 and 8 U.S. Code 1611. There are serious penalties for failing to follow the uniform rule of naturalization. Immigration law 8 U.S. Code 1324 states that it's a crime to either knowingly or recklessly, quote, conceal, harbor, or shield from detection, or attempt to conceal, harbor, or shield from detection, transport, move, or attempt to transport or move, or to even encourage or induce an illegal alien coming into America. That is a federal crime. What does that say about our sanctuary cities?
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back. And yes, you heard me right going into the break. It is a federal crime, according to 8 U.S.C. Code 1324, to, quote, conceal, harbor, or shield from detection, or attempt to conceal, harbor, or shield from detection, transport or move, or attempt to transport or move, or to even encourage or induce an illegal alien to, quote, come to, enter, or reside in the United States, knowingly or in reckless disregard of the fact that such coming to, entry, or residence is or will be in violation of law. I want us to think about that for just one second. Sanctuary cities are a violation of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4. They are a violation of the federal laws enforcing Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4. So, Greg Abbott outlawing sanctuary cities is not really outlawing a sanctuary city. He is enforcing the law. He's not creating any new law. I want us to really understand that. Greg Abbott is not creating new law. So any attack on Greg Abbott for his actions is really pointless. Because Greg Abbott is not creating a new law. Texas is not writing a new law. Texas is enforcing Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 of the Constitution, enforcing 8 U.S. Code 1611. What are the penalties for violating these laws? Well, not only that, okay, let's not skip over this. So we also have 8 U.S. Code 1611, which sets forth specific federal benefits that cannot be given to illegal aliens. Quote, Section 1611 defines a benefit as follows. Any grant, contract, loan, professional license, commercial license provided by any agency of the United States or by appropriated funds of the United States and any retirement, welfare, health, disability, public or assisted housing, post-secondary education, food assistance, unemployment benefits, and any other similar benefit for which payments or assistance are provided to an individual, household, or family eligibility unit by an agency of the United States or by appropriated funds of the United States. End quote. Any federal funding going to an illegal alien or their family is a violation of federal law. You see, that's why President Trump is not doing anything wrong by refusing to allow federal funding to go to sanctuary cities. It is against the law for anyone, whether it be an individual or a group of individuals we call a city, to distribute federal funding to illegal aliens. Donald Trump is not violating the law by refusing federal funding to these sanctuary cities. He is enforcing the law as his duty as executive of the United States to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. It is his duty to do this. Once again, we must sit back and scratch our heads and be somewhat baffled at the idea that those in the educated areas of law would disagree with that factual statement. It is a matter of fact that the President of the United States must faithfully execute the laws of Congress. It is a matter of fact that Congress has been delegated the authority to create the uniform rules of naturalization. Among those rules are the rules of enforcement of those rules of naturalization. And Article 8 U.S.C. 1611 defines it as a crime, a violation of the uniform rule of naturalization for federal funding to go to these entities and to these illegal aliens. And when you have an entire city saying, you know what? We're going to disregard the law. A law that is created lawfully, a law that is created constitutionally, a law that our state must be bound to by contractual agreement, we're just going to disregard that. That, by the way, is not the definition of nullification. Nullification is only the states enforcing the Constitution when the federal government is violating it. Uniform rules of naturalization and the laws penalizing breaking those rules are not a violation of the contract. They are a fulfillment of the contract. It is the sanctuary cities that are breaking the law. And it is the job of their state, as a party to the contract, it is a job of the president to faithfully execute the laws of the United States to ensure this is not happening. We have to know that this is complete contractual lawlessness. So let's talk about these penalties. The penalties for allowing or for violating 8 U.S.C. 1611, 8 U.S.C. 1324. Because if you or I, as an individual, violated these laws, the federal government would be justified to prosecute us as individuals criminally. We have to know that if we can be punished criminally as individuals, how can those who come together, individuals come together and call themselves government, commit a crime that is illegal for the, commit a crime and not be punished if the individual themselves would be punished? That is despotism. When the people who are enforcing the laws, are they themselves above the laws that they are enforcing? That is the definition of despotism. Look at what this says. Quote, for each alien in respect to whom a violation of this law occurs will be fined in accordance with Title 18 or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. So any person who, during a 12-month period, knowingly hires, houses, hides, or provides transportation to an illegal alien or encourages an illegal alien to come into the United States so he can be hired, housed, or hidden, or transported, can serve up to a year in jail and a fine for each illegal alien. What does that say about a sanctuary city who is inviting hundreds of them? What does that say about those city council, that county commission, who steps back and says, no, we're going to do this in violation of the law? Each and every person in that county commission, each and every individual within that city council should be subject to federal prosecution. Listen to this. If granting any of those benefits, remember, the benefits that we listed in 1611, welfare, housing, food assistance, employment benefits, anything like that, anything beyond emergency medical needs, there is an exception. Someone with an emergency medical need, a sniffly nose is not an emergency medical need. An emergency medical need is exempt from that. Everything else is a federal crime. It says any person who during any 12-month period knowingly hires for employment at least 10 individuals with actual knowledge that the individuals are aliens described in subparagraph B shall be fined under Title 18 or imprisoned for not more than 5 years or both. Does this mean that the sanctuary cities are actually entrapping their citizens to committing federal crimes? I mean, surely if they're sanctuary cities, then they're also going to be encouraging the employment of these people. So any individual within that city who employs an illegal alien is subject to a year in prison. If they hire more, 10 or more illegal aliens, then they're subject to 5 years in prison. Anybody granting, according to these laws, anyone granting benefits to illegal aliens will be, and it was discovered that it was done for the purpose of commercial advantage or private financial gain, they will be fined and imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. Couldn't you argue, quite reasonably, that those in the sanctuary cities are allowing and encouraging illegal aliens to come into their cities for their own personal and financial gain? Isn't this just a political move? Your city councilmen and your county commissioners in these sanctuary cities, they're now looking up to like 20 years in prison for what they're doing as sanctuary cities. I just, when we're engaging in these great debates, as they classify them, I have yet to hear anybody discuss within these debates the laws that actually exist. Why isn't anybody in the mainstream media, why aren't we having experts on Fox News or CNN discussing 8 U.S.C. 1611 and 8 U.S.C. 1324. I mean, if we're going to have a real educated debate on these issues, why are we not discussing Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4? Greg Abbott is not breaking the law. He's enforcing the law. President Trump, for refusing to send federal funding to sanctuary cities, is not violating the law. He is enforcing the law. And isn't it about time the people who are enforcing the laws in your state and local governments be subject to the laws that they enforce?
Don't listen to my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your old man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
You know, I think we need to really ask ourselves, when will we grow weary of these double standards? When will we grow weary of government engaging in activity that they themselves have declared to be illegal? When are we going to grow weary of the Constitution being openly, blatantly ignored, overturned by people who just don't think it should matter? The very people who have their... Does anybody else find this ironic? The very people whose jobs exist because of the Constitution are the ones who are claiming the Constitution is outdated, irrelevant, and can be ignored. If that's so, then why don't we ignore our congressmen? If that's so, why don't we ignore the judiciary? If they themselves believe that the Constitution is outdated and they can ignore it, well, they are the creation of the Constitution, therefore we should ignore them. When are we going to grow weary of this double standard, of this despotism? Because I think that we should know that individuals are prosecuted in America for violating these immigration laws. And yet we have entire cities coming together and saying, so what? We'll put you in prison for it, but you can't touch us. I wonder why that is. Is it because there's a group of them? Is it because there's a large number of people who are refusing to follow the law that the federal government doesn't want to enforce the law on that large group of people? Doesn't that sort of change the way we think about how the government enforces the laws? maybe this idea that we're a democracy has become so prevalent that not only do we get to create laws by majority will, but we can also enforce laws by majority will. Why is it that if I have 12, a gang, oh, that's a good, interesting thing, right? So we have our new Department of Justice coming together to take an active and proactive stance against gang activity. What exactly is a gang? A gang is a group of people acting in concert with each other to break in the breaking of laws. An illegal gang, I suppose, you know, your Rotary could be a group of people acting in concert to something, but they're not acting in concert to break the law. So a group of people acting in concert to break the law is a gang. Wouldn't that classify sanctuary cities as gang members? People who are coming together. I mean, just think about that. People coming together in a concerted effort to break the law as a corporate body is a gang. And our sanctuary cities are gangs. And so now we have the government wanting to enforce the laws on certain gangs, but then allowing other gangs, because they're political, to violate the law with no accountability. This is how banana republics form. This is how despotism grows. When people who are above the law simply because of their class, above the law simply because of who they are enjoined to, above the law simply because of the perceived power that they hold. This is why America declared independence from Great Britain. This is why America declared independence from kings. This is why America said, we will not be an aristocracy. We will not be a democracy. We will be a constitutional republic. Now, when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about Attorney General Jeff Sessions sending out a letter late this week to national federal prosecutors to seek the most serious charges possible against most criminal suspects, as it is being told to us. We're going to look at that from a Liberty First perspective.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back. This is Chris Ann Hall, KrisAnneHall.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. You know, we have an obligation to make sure that those who make the laws abide by the laws that they make. Because if those who make the laws are not bound by the laws that they make, then you no longer operate under a representative government. You operate under a dictatorship. You do as I say or else. Do as I say, not as I do. And so part of our obligation as individuals, as the founders of our constitutional republic declared, that there must be a jealousy and a vigilance of the people to the preservation of their own rights and their own liberties. We're not allowed to sit back and permit those in power to exercise greater power than we have officially legally delegated. We are not allowed to sit back and permit those to enforce laws yet not be bound by those laws. We are not allowed to do those things and still enjoy the benefits of liberty. when that happens. We are not living under liberty anymore. We are living under despotism. And the onus, the responsibility has always been on the individual. So many times, if you've been through my classes, you've heard the founders say, it is the jealousy and the vigilance of the people that is the strongest guard of their liberty. Think, who was it? Richard Henry Lee, writing as the letters of the Federal Farmer number 8. I believe it was number 8. Said that very thing. In argument in favor of the Bill of Rights, he says, we've got to have this Bill of Rights written down to be a visible barrier, constantly seen by the people as a reminder to them of their inalienable rights. Because when the people are reminded of their inalienable rights, they will be the strongest guard of those rights. It's when those people become pacified in prosperity, when they become lazy in luxury, when they become complacent and compliant in their comfort, that they start seeking things like prosperity and safety and security, and then they forget about those liberties. These are the warnings that they had for us. Richard Henry Lee used the specific terminology, the unavoidable periods of inattentiveness. See, liberty always produces prosperity, just like Marxism, communism, and socialism always produce poverty. They consolidate all the wealth into a certain class of people, and then everybody else is just equally poor. Liberty, on the contrary, always ensures the greatest prosperity, but with prosperity also comes certain consequences. Without an education in liberty, without an understanding of the importance of liberty, daily understanding that with prosperity comes comfort, with comfort comes apathy. And that's why Richard Henry Lee said that we had to be reminded on a daily basis of these unavoidable even especially during these unavoidable intervals of inattentiveness, when we become prosperous and we become distracted. Or, I guess, as we could say in America today, we become distractible. I mean, this is crazy. How much of our future they predicted by just simply knowing history and human nature. Amongst those liberties that were written within our Bill of Rights, amongst those liberties that we are to be constantly reminded of so that we will be jealously guarding these principles of liberty is the right to privacy in your property. The Fourth Amendment reads, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And no warrant shall issue, but based upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched or the persons or things to be seized. Now, we must combine that with the knowledge that this is something that we are to confine the federal, the government within. Your right to be secure in your persons, houses, papers, and effects. I mean, that's just everything. James Madison described, wrote an essay in 1792 called Property. And in that, he described that your property is not just simply your computer and your jewelry or your coffee cup, right? Your property is intellectual as well. It is your right to freedom of speech is property. Your right to freedom of press is property. Your right to secure and guard your rights, your right to keep and bear arms, is property. Within the Second Amendment, there are property rights. And within the Second Amendment, a property right is not just the firearm and the ammunition that you own in your right to keep and bear arms. Within the Second Amendment is the property right, according to James Madison, who has been deemed by history as the father of the Constitution. James Madison said that within the Second Amendment also exists a property right to your own personal security. a security that you are able to ensure and provide on your own without waiting for someone else to come and protect you and without asking for permission to do that. So when we recognize James Madison's description of property as being the basis of the description of property in the drafting of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, we must recognize, number one, that it's our responsibility to be vigilant and jealous about that definition of property. And number two, it is not up to the government to create those definitions. And it's certainly not up to the federal government to create exemptions to the restrictions of their own power to the defense of our liberty. So I want us to think about that for a second. Because the debate over our right to be secure in our persons, houses, papers, and effects exists in the term reasonableness. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. Every legal argument that is designed to either expand or constrain power of government in regard to this text of the Fourth Amendment is one that debates the definition of reasonableness. But here's the problem. We don't have to debate the definition of reasonableness because the Fourth Amendment establishes the definition of reasonableness. It's right there in the text. The Fourth Amendment does not end with the period after shall not be violated. Because it is true, you are not free from all searches and seizures, just unreasonable ones. But the second half of the text defines reasonableness, one where there is a warrant that is issued based upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. We need to know that these five things must all occur, must come together all at the same time with compliance in order to have a reasonable search and seizure. There is no exception for national security in the text of the Fourth Amendment. There is no exception for exigent circumstances in the matter of that text. There is no exception for safety or security within that text. The only exception to your right to be free from searches and seizures must contain five elements all at the same time. Not 4 out of 5, not 3 out of 5, not 4.5 out of 5. So having this factual, educational foundation of our right, the property that we have within the right to secure our property, must be foremost on our mind when we are reviewing and judging what Attorney General Jeff Sessions or the Department of Justice or the FBI is going, or the Department of Homeland Security is going to do with their power. This is something that is going to possibly run counter to what many people who consider themselves in government to be conservative would assert. Many people in government who consider themselves conservative would assert that we need a strong prosecution by the Department of Justice. We need a strong punishment by the Department of Justice through the investigation. We must have a strong power of investigation within the FBI. We must have a strict enforcement of the laws. Well, that would be true on certain circumstances, constitutional circumstances. Yes, we must have we must have a strong investigation. We must have firm compliance with federal laws that are created constitutionally. and that authority must rise from the Constitution, not from an agency, an agent, or a director. And this is why this understanding of the Fourth Amendment, the understanding of our property, as designed by the designers of our constitutional republic, is going to go contrary to what, to much of what Jeff Sessions is asserting as the authority of the Department of Justice and the FBI. Remember, there are two criteria to the authority of the power of the federal government. Number one, has it been a delegated authority? Is it a power that is specifically enumerated to the federal government? And number two, what is their authority to enforce the law? Does it come from the Constitution, or does it come from the rule of men?
The weapon of my choice, don't censor my voice. Hate me if you want, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So remember, the basis and the foundation for all understanding of the authority of the federal government stems from the Constitution and stems from an understanding of the applicability of the Constitution as determined by the designers of the Constitution. That's basic contract law. And Attorney General, according to Fox News Politics, Attorney General Jeff Sessions' office sent out a letter late this week to the nation's federal prosecutors instructing them to pursue the most serious charges possible against most criminal suspects. The officials at the Department of Justice said the new guidelines are a direct rebuttal of policies implemented under President Obama's Attorney General Eric Holder. The memo is being referred to as the Sessions Memo. The 94 U.S. attorneys were instructed in the memo to, quote, charge and pursue the most serious and readily provable offenses. Now, this is, just be aware, this is most directly applied to, as we refer to, the war on drugs, drug offenses. So it was Eric Holder who implemented what they called, quote, smart on crime drug sentencing policy that focused on not incarcerating people who committed low-level nonviolent crimes. Jeff Sessions says, no, we are going to engage in the strictest and most powerful of prosecutions of all drug crimes. We're going to be aggressive in our prosecution, which means now the FBI will necessarily be aggressive in their investigations of these drug crimes. So knowing these things, we need to be very concerned about the aggressive nature of, number one, the investigations, and the aggressive nature of the prosecution. First question, remember? Where does the authority arise in the Constitution for the federal government to prosecute crimes for drugs? Where is the authority within the Constitution for the federal government to create laws outlawing drugs or plants or whatever? Because some of the things that we have that are outlawed by Congress are not just simply pharmaceuticals, they are plants as well. They've classified the plant of hemp as and marijuana as a drug and have outlawed drugs, both chemical and natural. So where in the Constitution arises the authority of Congress to create laws to outlaw these drugs? Well, the answer is very simple. It does not exist. We never delegated any authority to the federal government to create laws outlawing drugs, or plants. Period. That power is a power that is reserved to the states on the state level. Article 1 does not delegate an authority over drugs and plants. Article 2 does not delegate an authority over drugs and plants. There is no amendment to the Constitution that allows the federal government to or delegates an authority to the federal government to create laws outlawing drugs or plants. So therefore, the federal government's prosecution and investigation of these laws arise with no authority. Because the original authority to create the law does not exist, the investigation and the prosecution of these laws does not exist either. An illegal action, anything follows that from an illegal action is called fruit of the poisonous tree. It carries no authority. Since there is no authority within the Constitution for the federal government to create laws outlawing drugs and plants, anything that arises from that illegally asserted authority is in of itself void and of no force. That's what Thomas Jefferson said. Whenever the federal government exercises undelegated power, its authority is void and of no force. So Jeff Sessions' assertion that we must be stricter in enforcing the federal drug laws arises with no authority and in of itself is an illegal, unconstitutional act.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Now, what I'm asserting to you is fact. What I'm asserting to you is Constitution 101. But once again, we as a people must know that the vigilance and the jealousy of our rights in protecting our rights must come from us first. And to understand that whenever the federal government exercises an undelegated authority, it does so to the direct contradiction of our rights. There is no authority resting within the federal government to search and seize an individual for suspected possession of drugs. And because there is no authority within the Constitution delegated to do that, there is no legal authority for them to prosecute either. All of that authority rests within the state. The powers not delegated to the federal government by the Constitution to the federal government are reserved to the states or to the people respectively. You make laws through your states, through the people, through the representatives that you've hired through your state republic. Remember, every state by contract must be a republic, which means the laws must be created through equal representation, representatives elected by their district whose laws are to be created as a reflection of those principles of the people. It's an autonomy left within the states. And for the federal government to insert itself in specifically reserved matters of the states is an unlawful activity. Nonviolent drug offenders, violent drug offenders, are simply not the purview of the federal government. Those in politics and government who believe themselves to be conservative, who are very statist in this matter, will find offense in those facts, but they cannot dispute those facts. They will try to disregard those facts through interpretations and expansions of power created by the federal government itself. Someone will tell you, well, the Supreme Court said that the Department of Justice could do this. The Supreme Court said that Congress can make a law out regulating marijuana because, after all, marijuana is a plant and it's a matter of commerce. And we know from the Filburn case that wheat is a commerce, and whether you engage in commerce or not, there's a potentiality for commerce. Therefore, the federal government can regulate any potential commerce of plants. And therefore, the federal government can regulate marijuana. And from this exaggerated authority, invented authority, it's not even exaggerated, it's completely invented. We have now expanded that authority, not to just simply regulating marijuana, but to outlawing it altogether. God help us if somebody ever figures out how to smoke apples, how to smoke, I don't know, whatever. Because once somebody figures out how to smoke something and ingest it into their body, all of a sudden now the federal government wants to outlaw it or regulate it. We have to get a permit and a prescription to buy apples. But here's the thing. They don't have the authority to do it constitutionally. Therefore, their actions are illegal. And that's going to really chap some of our conservative political hides. If you want aggressive prosecution for drugs, you must seek that aggressive prosecution through your state and local governments. It cannot come through the federal government because they don't have the authority. And whether this is going to be popular or not, whether it's going to be accepted by those conservatives in political power, is irrelevant to the facts. And I'm sorry. Truth over personality must prevail. And what we as a people must do is become reattached to our jealousy and our vigilance to protect our rights. James Madison, in his essay called Property, said that it is not a just government when the property of the people is not secure and is created insecure by arbitrary searches and seizures. What is an arbitrary search and seizure? An arbitrary search and seizure is where the government can create warrants and laws that do not comply with the limitation of the Constitution. Any law that is written based on a power that is not specifically delegated is an arbitrary law because it's based on a power that does not exist. It's just created by the whim and the will of the government itself. And our framers, the designers of our constitutional republic, wanted us to specifically guard against those laws and the people who would want to enforce those laws aggressively. You know me, this is no deviation from my original opinion. I was never really a fan of Jeff Sessions from the very beginning. I am concerned about his aggressive nature of enforcing and prosecuting laws that the federal government don't have the authority to exercise under. I'm concerned about his aggressive war on drugs, a war on drugs that should exist on the state level, if it exists, and not on the federal level. And I'm also concerned about Jeff Sessions' attachment to civil asset forfeiture as a part of this war on drugs. Another power not delegated to the federal government with specific and historical reasons. Let's sort of switch gears, not completely, but a little bit. And go to regulations, federal regulations, regulations created by executive agencies. Now, we should have a fundamental constitutional liberty problem with regulations created by executive agencies, by bureaucrats, elected by no one, which carry the force of law. A regulation created by the EPA is created by a group of bureaucrats within the EPA. You did not elect them. I bet you don't even know their names. And yet these people create regulations that have a recognized, albeit unlawful, a recognized force of law. I mean, if we just think about this for just one second, what is the difference between an EPA regulation and a law created by Congress? Well, look at Joe Robertson. Look at our Amish farmer. EPA and FDA regulations. They took their property. They put them in prison, looking to spend the rest of their lives in prison for violation of a regulation, not a law. Okay, so the law was created by Congress, the Clean Air Water Act and those other kind of laws, but they are written in such a vague manner that the agencies themselves create the specific terms within those laws. How do we enforce this law? What is the compliance of this law? And the compliance and the enforcement changes with each new regulation or amendment to the regulation. So these things, these regulations carry the force of law. They can take your money, they can take your property, and they can put you in prison. But they're not written by anybody that you've elected. They are the epitome of legislation without representation. That is the very definition of an executive agency regulation, legislation without representation. And that ought not be something that a diligent and vigilant and jealous people allow in a constitutional republic. So it comes up the question, what kind of check and balance ought there be on regulations? Well, if we're going to be constitutionally consistent, then the regulations ought not exist to begin with. The laws should be created by Congress going through the proper legal binding mechanism. They must be created by the House, the Senate. They must be approved by the House and the Senate. They must go through the President of the United States. They must suffer the threat of veto. If vetoed, they must be then overruled by Congress. And if not overruled by Congress, then they're no law at all. Or they must be just simply signed into law by the President. And the terms of the Clean Air Water Act, the terms of the laws regarding drugs and that sort of thing, which, by the way, are unconstitutional to begin with, must be passed specifically with every single punishment and every single violation specifically enumerated by Congress. Because that's the only way you're going to get legislation through representation. So we should not have an autonomy within our agencies to create regulations, because that is a per se violation of a representative, a republic-style government. Now, the question has come up now because the Senate is blocking the repeal of an Obama administration environmental regulation. The question is, should Congress have an administrative authority? Should regulations require congressional approval? Well, of course they should. All laws with the force of law must follow the proper constitutional procedure to become a law. Because if they do not, they are a violation of the Constitution, and Alexander Hamilton said that makes them no law at all.
Hate me if you want, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your old man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Should Congress have ruling authority? Should Congress be required to approve all regulations created by executive agencies? Well, I'll go one step forward and tell you Congress must create all regulations to be enforced by the executive agencies. You see, here's another problem that we have, and I think because we don't think about the foundational basis of the Constitution, the EPA, the FDA, the USDA, all of the ATF, the Department of Justice, FBI, they're all executive agencies. They're part of the executive branch. The executive branch does not have the authority delegated to it by the Constitution to create law. The authority delegated to the executive branch by the Constitution is the faithful execution of the laws created by Congress. Now, we've masked this. We've deceived the people for way too long by calling these laws regulations when we've already proven in the last segment that law, there isn't, the only difference between a law and a regulation is that a regulation is created without representation, which should make it per se unconstitutional. So the only authority delegated regarding law to the executive branch is the faithful execution of those laws. They shouldn't be writing them. They shouldn't be inventing them. They shouldn't be interpreting them. They should be simply executing them, which means that their responsibility is to ensure the lawful enforcement of the laws limited by the terms of due process. So should Congress approve all future regulations? No. Congress should be required to write those regulations so that the EPA may enforce them. Now, you all are shaking your heads and scratching your heads, I believe, because you know as well as I do that there is no constitutional authority for the EPA. There is no constitutional authority for the ATF, for the USDA, for the FDA. So these laws ought not be executed at all. But a functioning federal government doesn't necessarily mean it will always be a lawfully functioning federal government. And when the federal government stops operating lawfully, we are not to sit around and wait for them to check themselves. That is ridiculous. No central government, once becoming unlawful, has ever stepped up and corrected its own course without force. So what is the force that corrects the federal government when it tries to create laws regulating our environment, our plants, and our guns, and our air, and our water, and our labels? Well, that force is called your state. Your state must be the opposing force to a federal government who is refusing to operate under the limited and defined authority of the Constitution. James Madison said that your state would be the greatest power on earth to control a federal government that is not following the law. He said that your state and local governments would be the greatest opponent to a federal government acting unlawfully, not their best friends, co-workers, and on the same payroll. You wonder why Jeff Sessions and those in politics who believe that the federal government is just veritably unlimited in their power. It's because we have failed to enforce the Constitution for so long. Go read Alexander Hamilton's Federalist 78. The big government guy explained to us that when we allow unconstitutional laws to have the legal force of law, then we have created our own monster. And it is required of us to put the government back in its box. Find us at chrisannhall.com. So much of what I've taught you today is available in writing on the website. Just use the search engine. God bless. See you tomorrow.